Thanks. Good evening. I'm going to talk about compassion and obedience tonight. But I realize I'm going to tell a few stories that won't make any sense at all, or you'll find really strange unless you kind of know what I do every day, what I do for a living. So very quickly, to kind of sum it up, I work as part of a small team in King's Cross, Camden, Euston, sort of a triangle of that area, doing ministry to people who you could describe as being marginalized, so rough sleepers, guys in prison, guys who've just come out of prison, people caught up in sex work, people who are elderly and lonely, people who are alcoholics, drug addicts, gamblers, all that stuff. So that's what I do every day, is spend time with these people. So a lot of what I'm saying is kind of coming from my experience and what I know about this stuff. So yeah, compassion and obedience. I want to talk really about how they work together, because I think when we exercise compassion and obedience together, it's a very, very powerful thing. We can really have a big impact on people's lives if we have compassion and obedience working hand in hand. So what I want to try and explain and dig into is taking Jesus as our example, as in doing what he did, but also doing what he said. So taking him as an example and also following his commands, doing what he did and doing what he said. And the reasons why I really want to talk about this, I think, came from, I had lunch with John Carter one day, and we were talking about kind of church and ministry stuff, and it got me thinking about a few different things, and two of them have led into this talk. One, if you've been on KXC for any time, you may have heard of a sort of picture or a vision that was given to someone on the KXC leadership team back when the church was planted, and it was of a red carpet being rolled out of the front of the church, and up that carpet into the church building were walking people from all sorts of backgrounds, all different walks of life, people who had all sorts of different problems and things going on, and they were walking up this red carpet, and we were, as a church, were welcoming them. And after I'd had a conversation with John, I kind of thought about that picture, and it's something that, you know, I just accepted and thought, hold on a minute, maybe we've been looking at it the wrong way. Maybe it's the wrong way around. Maybe the red carpet's actually being rolled out for us as a church to go out of the church building. These people who are hurt and broken and coming from all different places, maybe we are the ones who need to walk down the red carpet and go to them. That was just something that I was thinking about. You know, are we as a church willing to go out to people rather than waiting for them to come to us? The second reason was, more and more every day and every week, I realize that loving people is really hard. I think we need to be willing to invest in people's lives for a long time if we want to see anything happen. And tonight I really just want to encourage us that every single one of you sitting here can go out to people who are hard to love, who are difficult to love, and all of us can make a difference in people's lives and in the community around us. So first, let me have a little look at compassion and what I mean about compassion. Compassion, of course, meaning to suffer with. We talk about it a lot at KXC, but let's kind of see what Jesus says about it. So the first passage I want to read is Matthew 9, if you want to look it up, from verse 35. Matthew 9, verse 35. And in my Bible, it's titled, The Workers Are Few. So it says, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." So, in the run-up to this passage, what has just happened in chapter 8 and chapter 9 has been pretty full on. Jesus has been involved in a whole series of healings and different intents and events and conversations and things. I've kind of made a list of what he's done in the two chapters that we read about in Matthew, and I'm going to read it to you just to give you an impression of what Jesus has been up to. So he cleanses and heals a leper. He heals the centurion's paralyzed servant. He heals Peter's mother-in-law. He heals many who were sick or oppressed with demons. He calms the storm. He heals two demon-possessed men who lived in tombs. He healed another paralyzed man. He recruited Matthew, the tax collector, to become his disciple. He healed a woman who couldn't stop bleeding. He raised a girl back to life. He healed two blind men. He healed a man who was unable to speak. And he also managed to squeeze in time, it says, to go on a trip throughout all the cities and villages, teaching about the kingdom and healing some more diseases. So he's done a lot. That's just two chapters of Matthew. So Jesus was putting in this really relentless effort as part of his mission to proclaim the good news of the kingdom. Lives are being changed as they encounter Jesus. You can read about many of them here in Matthew. And Jesus commands us as his disciples, as his followers today, to go and do the same. And just like him, you know, there's no denying that it does take effort and it will cost us. I wonder when I read kind of that list of what Jesus was doing in Matthew, did he, at this stage, was he in that place where he wanted to just go and get some space, maybe just to go and sleep or to pray to his Father? You know, we read about him doing that in the Gospels on a few different occasions. He goes off on his own and prays, or he does sleep just like any normal human. And I wonder, was he feeling like that's what he really needed? But it says he looks at the crowd and he had compassion on them. I was thinking as well, about a few weeks ago, I felt like there was nothing I wanted more than just to really get away for a while and sleep. I was having one of those weeks when you're really quite close to the edge. You're just like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I'd been out in the streets, you know, all day, and it got to like 5 o'clock, and I was like, I just need to go home. I just want to like get into bed and drink a beer. And I was like leaving a park in King's Cross, and I was definitely had my eyes focused firmly and walking up the road to my house. But I noticed a guy who I've seen around King's Cross quite a lot, and I've never had an opportunity to speak to him. And I've always wanted to speak to him because you'd probably know him if I described him to you, but I won't. He stands out, even in King's Cross, which is quite a strange place. This guy stands out as a real character. And I saw him walking across the road, and as he was crossing the road, he just tripped and fell, and he smashed his face off the ground, and he was pissing blood everywhere, and he was just lying there, and I think he'd knocked himself out. And at that point, you know, my plans to go home to get into bed with a beer were just, you know, thrown out the window. I had to go and help the guy. And it was great because as I was able to help him and get him back to where he lived and do this and that, I got to know him a little bit. And it was amazing that someone who I'd wanted to speak to for a long time, this allowed me to be able to get to know him. But my point is, at that stage, there was nothing I could do apart from have compassion on them. I wasn't doing anything special. My response had to be compassionate. I couldn't do anything else. And I think when we see Jesus here in verse 36, he can't do anything but have compassion on the crowds. Even if he did, like, even if it was like my theory that he wanted to go away and pray, he couldn't do anything else but have compassion on them. But why? It says they were like a sheep without a shepherd. So what does this mean? What does he mean by that? They were lost. They were leaderless. They were directionless. They were living with disappointment. And I like the way it describes them as being harassed and helpless. I think that sums up the situation pretty well. You know, does this description sound similar to the conditions of the people that we see around us here in London, even in King's Cross? Does it sound like our own condition? You know, lost, leaderless, directionless, living with disappointment, harassed, helpless. So when Jesus sees them in the crowd and he has compassion on them, he does something about it. And it's not what I would expect him to do, and it's probably not what you would expect him to do either. What he does is he asks the disciples to pray that more people would be sent out to those that are lost. I mean, that's quite strange because we've seen this long list of all these miraculous things that Jesus is doing in the area. And then when he sees this crowd who are lost, he says, guys, pray that more will be sent out to them. I think that's quite a strange response. But this is the one thing I'll say. If you ignore everything else I'm going to say tonight, listen to this. That prayer that Jesus and his disciples prayed, what if today you were to consider yourself to be part of the answer to that prayer? Jesus and disciples prayed it all that time ago, but what if you and I today were part of the answer to that prayer? Would that change things for you? I think it would have to. You know, we all definitely struggle at times with a sense of purpose and identity, especially when it comes to meeting the needs of people around us. It's hard to sometimes find our way when we see problems and we want to do something about it, but we don't really know what to do. We can feel unqualified. We can feel like we need to get our own mess sorted out first. We can feel too busy. we can feel too tired. You know, I feel like all those things all the time. But our attitude can change when we realize that we're people who, if we're trying to follow Jesus, we are actually the answer to his prayer. We are the workers that he prayed for. People, you know, they make assumptions about you when you first meet them. When I meet people out in the streets or in prison, they make a decision about what they think of me very quickly. And they can often decide, you know, whether they're going to even engage with me or talk to me at all. And it can take a long time for people to let you into their life, for them to trust you in any way. It can be a real uphill battle for people to, you know, get to a place where they can receive help. But the thing is, it doesn't actually take any special requirements or gifts to show compassion to people, other than just us knowing that we are called by God to do it. That's all it takes. You know, it's very easy to feel overwhelmed by the amount of people in our community who are in real trouble. It's easy for us to say, how could we possibly make a difference? KXC, as a church, we're doing loads of different things, different projects and activities, you know, and I'm involved in a ton of different things, but it all feels like it gets too on top of you sometimes. You're just like, there's too many people to speak to. There's too many people to help. What can I do? You know, I live in King's Cross as well, and that's a blessing and also a burden because I work here, but when I walk home, when I'm just trying to get to my own little space where I get some peace and quiet, I see so much stuff that kind of breaks my heart and I want to do something about it, but I can't do everything. So I end up just feeling really overwhelmed a lot of the time. One of my favourite things I get to do during the week is Thursday mornings I help oversee a drop-in up in Camden, and I'm sure you all know Camden pretty well, and it's how manic and a bit crazy it can be and some of the characters that are around there. So we have this tiny little drop-in in a church up there, and people from, I mean, all sorts of different people come there looking for our help. You know, we do a free barbershop as well, which is really cool. It's completely unrelated and irrelevant, but we do this little free barbershop, so a lot of the punks from Camden have started coming in, so I'm like trimming their Mohicans now, and I've got to know loads of those guys, so it's really cool. But anyway, loads of people come in, and they want help. They're looking for someone to help them and support them. They're looking for someone to talk to. And there was a morning a few weeks ago, and my colleague Neil wasn't there, so I was on my own, and it was just madness. You know, there was dogs, there was drunk people, there was drugs, there was people crying, it was just crazy. And I was trying to like make sure everyone was safe and okay. And I walked away from that, and again I was going home. I was just like, oh, this is just too much. This is just absolutely insane. And as I was walking home, I saw, I would say, between 15 to 20 people on the streets of King's Cross passed out. And I didn't know any of them. They were all new people, all new to the streets around here. And I was just like, what is going on? Like, I can't deal with this. But there's problems when it comes to showing compassion to people. One of them is that a lot of people don't want to even receive compassion. A lot of people just don't even want to know. So what might be some of the reasons? One is that they might have got themselves into such a mess over the course of their life that they just feel so much shame and embarrassment and guilt that they just want to be left alone. They just don't want anyone else to know about what they've done or how they feel about it. Maybe they just don't think anyone could possibly understand what they've been through or what they're experiencing. They just don't think anyone else would get it. I've got a mate that I've known for about 4 years now, and I'm always trying to get him to get some help with his sort of substance abuse issues, but he won't because, truthfully, he's lived a life that has just been completely dominated by crime and violence. You know, that's how he's lived his life, and he's paying the consequences of it now. Everything he's ever cared about or any sort of support or stability has been taken away from him because of what he's done. And he's in so much pain now, he just covers it up with drink and drugs, and he doesn't seek help with those things because he thinks no one could possibly understand what he's going through. And I kind of get it. I'm like, mate, yeah, no one could understand, but does that mean I should just walk away from him and stop trying to help him or stop encouraging him to seek help? No, of course it doesn't. Another reason that people would be refused compassion is they've been hurt and let down so much in the past. Maybe by people they were in relationships with. You know, the main reason why people end up on the streets, certainly of London and England, is due to a relationship breakdown. Maybe they've been let down by the authorities, even by the church or by well-meaning Christians. And because of this, they become unwilling to let anyone in. promises have been made and then promises have been broken. They've been taken advantage of, or even they've done horrendous things to others so often that they believe that's what's naturally just going to happen again. You know, why would I believe what that person tells me? Everyone else has let me down. They're going to do the same. Maybe they can misinterpret compassion as pity or charity or judgment. I've used this example when I've spoke here in KXC before, but I'm going to tell you it again because I think it illustrates perfectly what my point is. I want you to imagine someone who is begging on the streets of London. Picture your local tube station or your local supermarket. Imagine someone sitting on the street outside there asking for change. That person, over the course of a day, I think will experience one of three things happen to them. The first one is they can be ignored. Everyone just keeps walking on past, and all they do is spend all day just staring at people's feet. The second thing is they might be abused. You know, I hear some pretty horrendous stories, and you know, of people being urinated on their sleeping bags, their sleeping bags being set alight, being kicked, their stuff being stolen, even by other people here on the streets. You know, another guy I know was stabbed 6 times in the back while he was in a sleeping bag one night, and he's lucky to be alive. You know, the abuse that these guys receive is just unbelievable. It might even be something just like, go and get a job, stop being so lazy, go back to where you came from. And the third one that might happen is they might be given some charity. Some nice person might take a bit of pity on them and offer them some change or a cup of coffee. And when they do that, they hand it down to them. The person's down here and they're up here. So they become part of this power dynamic where they are receiving charity, pity, and therefore, in a sense, some judgment. And none of these three things are good for the person who's sitting there. None of them are healthy. None of them are beneficial for them in the long run. You know, I don't think any of those things are really what compassion is. None of those are really to suffer with. Even though it's good to buy someone a cup of coffee, of course, it's not really showing them real compassion. You know, there was a period of my life, just before I moved to London years ago, and I was feeling pretty bad about myself. I felt pretty ashamed about the direction that my life was going in. And I often felt quite judged by my friends. And I think, looking back on it now, I felt judged by God as well. I couldn't really see compassion. You know, there was people who were trying to reach out to me, but I couldn't see that it was compassion. I just felt like I was being judged. I just felt like nothing was working. And as I look back, I think what I really needed at the time was someone just to be there with me and not judge me, not make me feel any worse about what I was doing. I already knew how much of an idiot I was being. I didn't need anyone to keep telling me. I needed to be around people as well that I could look up to and witness how life could be different. And thankfully, eventually that is what happened and I got out of that rut. So I believe that a big part of compassion is two things. It's to be non-judgmental and it's to point people in the right direction through how we live. This is what we're called to do. Remember I said we're the answer to that prayer that Jesus prayed with his disciples? This is what we're called to do. And it's so important for us to see ourselves as disciples who will go on to disciple others. I've had the privilege recently to walk through some stuff and some issues with a guy who's recently come to faith. He's still in prison, and we visit him regularly. And he decided that there was something about this Jesus that he liked, and he wanted to follow him. But he comes from a background of, you know, like many people I know, violence and abuse. And it's all very new to him, and he's just trying to figure it out. And he's really trying his best, and it's great to see, but he's got so many questions, and it's really interesting to sit down with him and hear how his brain is processing all these sort of Christian things that some of us might take for granted. And he wants to follow Jesus and he wants his life to change, but it's hard for him because he's going to have to completely change how he's lived his life, how he's made decisions, how he's acted. To give you an example, recently in prison, someone stole his chicken for dinner, his piece of chicken, and his response to that, which seemed completely normal to him, was to go to the guy and say, we're going to sort this out, you know, not in a cell, but out in the yard. We're going to do it publicly so everyone can see that I'm not a walkover. And the guy said, fine, let's do it tomorrow. And he went back to his cell and was planning how he was going to seriously hurt this guy the next day. But he says he couldn't sleep. He was just lying there wide awake, just feeling like all these crazy thoughts about it. And he said he's decided to pray. So he started praying. He's like, God, I don't really know what to do. I've got myself in a mess here. What should I do? And eventually he fell asleep. And when he woke up the next morning, he said he felt this amazing sense of peace, like something had shifted in him. So he sought the guy out who he had this issue with, the guy who had stole his chicken, and he went up to him. And instead of inflicting harm onto him, he stuck out his hand and said, this is over, this is dealt with, you know, let's just leave it. And the guy said, oh, I'm so relieved you did that. I've actually been feeling so bad. I'm really sorry for stealing that from you and for making a fool of you. So something's changing in him. And it's quite amazing to be able to walk through that stuff with him. And he still responds in quite a strange or violent or aggressive way to certain things, but I don't want to judge him on that. I just want to be there with him as he processes these things. You know, in this church, if you're a member of KXC, or even if you're not, there's many, many opportunities to get involved in mentoring or discipling someone or walking with them through this stuff. If you feel like you'd love to, you know, mentor someone who's coming out of prison, there's chances to do that. Someone who's on the streets, there's chances to do that. What about a mother or a woman who's around here who's vulnerable? There's loads of opportunities to do it. It's what we're called to do. But there's another truth that we can't really ignore, however. We're all sinful, we're all fragile, we're all broken, and regardless of all that really great stuff I've just said, some days we don't really feel up to it, right? And this is where obedience comes into play. So I've talked about compassion, and now I want to talk a little bit about how obedience works very well with that. So I want to read from Matthew 25, if you'd like to turn to that. So Matthew 25, I'm going to read from verse 34. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go and visit you? The king will reply, and tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. My point is that I think showing compassion to people around us, especially people who are quite challenging people, can often feel like a lot of pressure. When we show compassion to people, I think often what we're really doing is we're wanting them to change. We're wanting them to put everything in their life into a neat little box, to tidy themselves up, to get everything sorted out, to become really clean and organized and productive. But I don't think that's what compassion is either, because that stuff doesn't happen anyway. And if that's what we want for people's lives, if we go through this process of feeling something and wanting to feel compassionate towards people, and then walking with them, getting involved in their lives, but then we want them to change, and they don't change, then we feel burdened. And then what happens is, I think we try to become people's saviours. And then when that doesn't happen, we lose any interest, we give up. But this passage in Matthew, I think, changes everything for me. Instead of actually being this fear-inducing statement from Jesus that unless we do these things, we'll be eternally separated from God, I think it should bring us a real freedom to love people. Instead of being this really scary passage that people just don't really want to preach on or don't really want to read, I think it should be something that inspires us to go out and love people. Because Jesus doesn't tell us to rescue people. He's not telling us to fix their lives up. That's his job. Our job is just, I mean, as far as I can read here, our job is just to give hungry people something to eat, to give thirsty people something to drink, to show hospitality to strangers, to clothe people who need clothes, to take care of the sick, and to visit people in prison. I think that's what we have to be obedient to. And I've got this all really, really wrong on a few occasions. I'll kind of start to wind up now with a story. And this is an occasion where I became that saviour in someone's life. I really wanted to sort everything out for them. I had a vision of what I wanted them to be like and what I think they should be like, and I tried to help them get to that place, and it just doesn't work. I met this guy a long time ago, and he was on the streets of London, down in South London. And We became really good friends very quickly. We were born around the same time, so we were the same age, and we had loads in common. But our upbringings could not have been any different. You know, I was brought up in Northern Ireland in a Christian family, and he was abandoned by his alcoholic parents when he was a baby and in Russia, and grew up in a Russian orphanage. You know, I'm sure you can imagine what an orphanage in Russia was like in the 80s. Probably not a great place. And he was, you know, abused in some horrendous ways during his childhood and teenage years. And when I met him, he had come to England. He had reconnected with his sister who lived here and wanted to kind of make a fresh start, but it didn't work out. So he was on the streets, and he just got into such a mess with drugs and alcohol, and he was in and out of prison and stuff. But you've never met anyone with lower self-esteem in your life. The guy just had no value in himself at all, and he would self-harm in such a serious way that he nearly killed himself quite a few times from cutting. He would slash his wrists and his legs very badly, but he would break bottles and cut his throat and cut his face kind of every couple of days. And it was really hard to watch this, because I really loved this guy and really cared for him. But unfortunately, I tried to fix him, and I did a lot of stuff that was very unprofessional and actually quite dangerous at times, trying to make this guy's life better. And what ended up happening was, in the centre I worked in at the time, there was one day I wasn't there, and he came in and beat a guy really badly, nearly killed this guy. And I got back to work the next week, and they said, yeah, he's never coming back, and he ended up getting arrested and deported. So that was that, and I just thought, I'll never hear from this guy again. You know, I used to think about him a lot over the years, and I used to pray, you know, God, if he is alive, wherever he is, just please do so, keep him safe, keep him alive, do something in his life. But I just assumed he was either dead or in a prison in Russia. And then about 3 years later, it was just before Christmas there, I got a message on online, and it was from this guy. And I thought, what is going on? Like, he's still alive. This is amazing. And he just said, Luke, how are you? And then I wrote back and I said, oh, wow, like, it's really nice to hear from you. You know, are you doing okay? What's going on in your life? Where are you? And then we started to message back and forth, him in his kind of broken English and me just with all loads and loads of questions, like, what's going on, what happened? And it turns out, long story short, is he ended up, you know, homeless in a country in Eastern Europe, and was picked up by a group of Christians from a church who brought him to a rehab centre where he got clean of drink and drugs. Then he went to this church, and he became a Christian and got baptised. And now a charity has given him a job working as like an outreach worker to homeless men in his area. And last time I spoke to him, he just got back from a missions trip in Ukraine. And my point is that even when we get it wrong, God has got so much mercy and so much compassion and love for people, like way more than we ever could have. Like, I made a mess of that situation, that relationship, but God still was doing something in him. God was at work. He was sorting it out. You know, it's not us. We don't have to fix people. We can't. But God does. So going back to that first passage, Jesus looked out in the crowd and he had compassion. I don't think it's difficult for us just to take a step out there. Between here and the station, you can look around you, and surely you'll have compassion on people who are lost. We just need to open our eyes and then step into what Jesus has called us to do. We need to go out to them. So I'm just going to finish. I'm just going to ask you, and this is what I want you to reflect upon, is how are you going to respond to the lost around us? How are you going to respond to people who are directionless, leaderless, wandering around, not knowing what to do with their lives, just really confused, harassed, and helpless? What are you going to do when you see those people?